You are listening to the Breaking the Spell podcast hosted by Zuzanna Berendt
and Anna Majewska.
The podcast consists of four episodes, which are the harvest of the artistic research process conducted in the framework of the Breaking the Spell project. The podcast emerged from the archiving practice, which we developed during the project.
Each episode combines conversations and sound contributions prepared by the Breaking the Spell participants. And now we turn it over to Marta Kyle, the curator of the project.
My name is Marta Kyle, and I would like to introduce you to the Break in the Spell. It's been a pilot step of the artistic research project that reflected practices of thinking with and being with in performing arts, and researched spells as political and artistic practices, stemming from the moment of an overwhelming exhaustion. It attempted to understand how to make art in between the ends of the world. Together with a group of art workers, we have been looking for feminist strategies to re-enchant ways how we work and how we maintain transnational alignments. For a year and a half, in 2022 and 2023, we gathered in four European cities, being hosted by Residenz Schauspiel in Leipzig, Munich Kammerspiele, Innsbruck Performing Arts Institute in Warsaw, and Vier Nul Vier in Ghent. What you will listen to is by no means a result of this journey, as we feel it has only started. We are rather offering a glimpse into our exchanges, questions, struggles, and joys, with hope to become many in re-enchanting the ways we do things in the art and far beyond.
In this episode, we will be talking about feminist practices of witchcraft in performing arts. During the conversation, artists will discuss various ways of understanding the notion of a spell, dwell on the performative power of casting spells, share their approaches to working with more than human beings in art.
In the conversation took part Aleksandra Borys, Mike Dietrich Frydecki, and Stefanie Wenner. It was moderated by Zuzanna Berendt and Marta Kyle. The conversation was recorded during the Breaking the Spell gathering in Ghent. The performative commentaries to our conversation were created by Martina Hefter, Georgia Ohanesian-Nardin, and Ingrid Franken. Let's start with Ingrid Franken's short introduction to spellmaking. In her artistic and activist practice, Ingrid works with spells as tools of transforming the current political reality. According to her, spells can change the present and bring us closer to the future that we strive for.
Hi, as my contribution to the Breaking the Spell podcast, I want to offer you my formula for making spells and a small reflection on the potential of spell work in contemporary life. Magic has been practiced for millennia across cultures. It is a way of relating to and being part of the world, entangled with and giving rise to art, religion, and science. There are different magical traditions, and it is important to be mindful of cultural context and appropriation, which makes me personally interested in looking for contemporary approaches and open frameworks, and approaching magic and spell work as a democratic tool that can be practiced by anyone. A spell can be seen as a focusing of energy and intention, an integration of desired outcomes through embodied micro-actions into daily life. Spell work is something very practical. Though it is important to realize that the outcomes of a spell might be unpredictable. Misspellings might lead to unforeseen outcomes. Ingredients might not be at their best. Spell casting holds space for non-binary potentials on a continuum of change. Spells can bless, transform, curse, banish, attract, bind or unbind. Though a regenerative outcome would have my personal preference over destructive ones, since spells exist first and foremost in ourselves. Creating a spell might give you strength and direction in difficult times. It might bring forth desired futures or avert impending doom. It might be a support for your art and activism, or art and activism in and of itself. Through experience and failure, trial and error, I have come to 7 recommended phases or parts that combined can form an effective spell. You are free to interpret and enact them in a way that suits you. The phases that I would propose are observation, invocation, naming, transformation, embodying, closing, and anchoring. Orientation is our first phase. It is essential to take the time for observation. Observation is a practice of non-judgmental looking or listening at one's surroundings or the issue that you would like the spell to resolve. It is an especially useful tool when we're navigating a difficult or uncertain time. To know where and how to go, it helps to know where one is. Once observation is established, the spellcaster can then start invoking those elements or allies whose qualities and properties are needed for the outcome of the spell. So who do you need there to be alongside you in this spell? Which qualities would you like to gain? Calling upon energies, entities, and spirits acknowledges also that no one faces the world alone. The wisdom and experiences of others might be needed to plot your course. Now we enter into a more fragile part of the spell, which is naming. The naming can be about naming the harm you want to counter, the uncertainty, or naming the desired outcome. This is the phase where most confusions happen. Misspellings can cause unintended consequences. Ursula Le Guin writes, "Magic exists in most societies in one way or another, and one of the forms it exists in a lot of places is, if you know a thing's true name, you have power over the thing or the person." So in order to gain agency over the harm you're trying to counter or the future you're trying to bring forth, a correct naming is essential. Once named, a transformation becomes possible. Often a spell is cast to create a change or a shift. Transformation can take many forms. It can be binding something, cursing, blessing, protecting, mending, healing, merging. It can be becoming something else altogether. Here, having a clear intention is of great importance. Then, those transformations need to be integrated or embodied by the spellcaster. This is a more active part and less verbal part of the spell. You can do this, for example, through a movement that interprets the transformation, or ingesting some of your chosen allies, marking something on objects or on your body, an illustrative action such as herbs burning, water evaporating, ice melting, seeds germinating, etc. Through integration, you can take responsibility and agency in the ongoingness of the spell. To minimize confusions and misspellings and to create a limit for the spell, it should be properly closed. Often, this is done by offering gratitude to the invoked allies and releasing their presence. I would personally recommend to use a physical gesture to close your spell. And then lastly, I want to suggest a practice of anchoring after closing the spell. A practice of anchoring is repeating a small action for a certain amount of time that reinvokes the power of the spell in your daily life. Perhaps this action happens each hour or once a day for 21 days. It creates a small remembering and the strengthening of the intention and workings of your spell. I would suggest anchoring through a physical action or in a concrete physical place, an altar, buried in earth, launched in a body of water. For this, it can be as simple as repeating a word, or it can be as complex as doing a whole 1.5 hour choreography for a whole month. I hope with these phases, you can create your own spells, whether they are written spells that you pronounce or whether they're action-oriented spells, and you can create the navigational tools and the shifts and transformations that you need to see happen.
And now, let's go straight to the conversation, in which we will discuss the performative understanding of a spell, as well as many more different approaches to spell making.
My name is Zuzanna Berend. I'm a researcher and independent curator based in Krakow, Poland. And for the Breaking the Spell, I was doing what was called archiving practice together with my friend Ania Majewska.
My name is Aleksandra Borys. I work with choreography, but I allow myself I allow the choreography to be as open as possible and invite whatever it needs to invite in order to become what it needs to become. And I guess in a way I work with choreography of senses, sensorial choreography and sensorial body that goes beyond or that includes physical and non-physical senses that are available, so definitely much more than 5, probably around 21 or 36 senses.
My name is Stefanie Venner, and I think I work mostly like with bodies, like all kinds of bodies, and the question of what makes a body a body. And I have an ally, like another buddy I have been working with since now almost 7 years, which is a mushroom costume. And they're really informing my practice. Yeah, maybe the closest to something that is like something that I'm really working on at the moment artistically is working with charts and drawing them with different means in the mushroom costumes, which is sort of intended to be some kind of a healing process.
Hello. My name is Mike Tonight, and I'm really loving the magic of voice and registration. Sorry, I'm just indulging in the moment. I am here surrounded by really, really beautiful people with whom I'm looking forward to have this conversation with. Although it's a bit out of our presentation line, I will nevertheless also position myself. As this is a only voice registering, I want you to know about me that I'm a white person with a non-disabled body and the privileges that go along with that. I situate my practice at the moment a lot in between the myths of where I'm actually coming from, or more or less where I grew up. And therefore I have a tiny bit of, as I learned from Stephanie, a little woody ally with me. It's a bit of a piece of wood that comes from the forest where I grew up in and where I spend a lot of time in. And this bit of wood was actually eaten up by an animal that is called the Borkenkäfer, and who actually killed this whole forest or transformed it into an empty hill. So this forest no longer exists, but I still managed to have a bit of piece of wood with it, which I keep in my jacket as a kind of Stimmtreu for myself. And there are 2 stones, but I won't talk about them anymore.
Thank you, Mike, for that. I think I will follow the pattern that you proposed, if that's okay. My name is Marta Kyle. I'm independent performing arts curator, researcher, dramaturg, based currently in Utrecht, coming from Poznan, Poland, relocating quite recently. I'm a white person with more or less able body. I'm here as the initiator of the Breaking the Spell project that I've been maintaining together with and in a close partnership with four hosting institutions, with the great support of Anya and Zuza, and with great strength coming from you all. So thank you again for that. Maybe I should start with the title. Where does it come from? It is borrowed from the actually existing book of political philosophy written by Isabel Stengers and Robert Pignat. It was published after one of the first ultra-globalist mass protests happening in the US. And it addressed capitalism as a sort of sorcery, as a condition or political or economic, socio-political, economic context that we operate within that is so much embedded in our bodies, in our minds, in our imagination, that we almost seem not to indeed see any alternative. And taking that understanding of a spell of a capitalist, patriarchal, colonial, hierarchical, often very violent society as a spell that we need to break. I found myself with that thought in the middle of 2020 during mass protests against the introducing the full abortion ban, almost full abortion ban in Poland. And I realized I'm all of a sudden in the middle of the witch hunt, and where female and feminized bodies seem to become the biggest social enemies all of a sudden. And that very battle was lost, but I guess the fight to enchant or re-enchant, if you like, the realm of the society within which we operate stayed with me as a big desire. This is the desire that cannot for sure be accomplished alone. Hence the need to look for, search for, the urge to search for allies, both human and inhuman. And as I'm embedded in the performing arts field, looking for artist thinkers whose artistic practices, but also modes of production they choose, re-enchant the way we work, the way we build relation with each other, with human and non-human companions, how we dismantle the dominating hegemonic conditions. And here the embodied lived knowledge, the knowledge that is very often ridiculed, not being perceived as serious enough, comes as a knowledge that is, as I believe, I strongly believe, generated within these artistic practices and generously distributed through them. And I started to perceive some of the artistic practices as the spells in a way, or as the modes to re-enchant, deeply transform, and challenge the dominating modes of production and modes of working in the performing arts field. And I was also really tempted by the performativity of a spell, thinking about it rather as a political condition in a way. So as a gesture within which when you speak, you change, you shift the perspective of how you see the reality. And therefore I would see the witchcraft practice as a very political one, and I guess we might come back to that claim in a moment. But for now, I wanted to ask you all, since we are here in Ghent at the moment, at the very final meeting of the Breaking the Spell in its current shape, after four gatherings that happened, I wanted to ask you how the witchcraft practices are interrelated with your artistic practices, or whether there are any tools as creating rituals, maybe spells, maybe using tarot cards as the way to inspire your artistic practices, or as a way of working.
Yeah, I can begin. I mean, first of all, I would like to say that I don't consider myself a witch.
Mm-hmm.
I don't refer to myself as a witch at all. Even though I have a set of practices that might be connected to that. And I mean, I'm maybe not that much interested in claiming or reclaiming that word, because actually for me there was like something. So I'm going a little bit outside, but I will answer your question. You know, sometimes there are these things that you that seem to be sort of like magical, but the magic is only that I don't know about it. Like, and I had this moment of when I was reading the Federici book, when I thought, okay, I mean, that makes so much sense. Like, yeah, of course, it's like primary accumulation, like they're taking away something from somebody and then they're saying no, and then this is like considered to be like the terrible old women, the hags, the witches, whatever, and they're the troublemakers. And so for me it's like something that is what was sort of like taken out of something like very like easy, something simple, and created into a weird thing. And somehow I don't really like to connect to the weirdness of it in a way, and maybe that's a political decision, could be. So I like to make use of practices, like maybe in a Foucaultian kind of a way. So like it's a toolbox, and I'm using what works for me, and what I'm leaving the rest. I've been acquainted to tarot cards for a really long time, and also astrology, but it's also, I'm in my mid-50s. It makes a total difference if somebody in my age sits there and reads tarot cards and looks into a crystal ball, or if somebody like sexy in their mid-20s does it. I don't know, it was like we were hiding it, sort of. I mean, I'm like early for me is like I'm a second feminist person, like in the 80s it was already done, of course, it was somehow done, but there was like we would have not said it. So it's like a shame thing, maybe, that is connected to that. But also like not finding it that important. Like it being like there is no division really between the practices somehow. It's like it's more like a casual connection.
Mm-hmm.
So it changed somehow, because I'm interested in what is esoteric, considered esoteric knowledge, and what is considered exoteric knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, like the esoteric knowledge is just what was decided at some point in history to be esoteric.
Mm-hmm.
And astrology is like a good example for that. And for me, it's like, yeah, of course, it's like inscribed in astrology, and I'm using astrology, I'm working with charts. And of course, all the planets need to be renamed. At a certain point, but it's a huge project. I definitely cannot do it alone. It is the whole like Greek-Roman cosmology embedded in this. So it's like the whole thing is like so politically loaded that there is like no chance that I can step out of, you know, there's like no utopian aspect in it. So it's the best example of how performativity works.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the utopian potential in it. So I'm using that actually to work with exactly this, like play it out, use it. And the tarot cards, like I pull a tarot card every day, but it's a private practice basically, but it's like just to also relocate, like where am I? It's also like it's trying to break the spell of me being very productive all of the time, just having some kind of like dramaturgical advice from a more than human entity coming in. And then I'm also using it for my book, because all the chapters of the book are like worked through
So, okay, the book is Counting on Earth, a play at the moment is the working title. And it's like, it has five chapters according to the five elements that we use in Kundalini yoga. And there are 10 bodies that sort of sit behind the five elements. And so, I drew two cards, one from the Rider-Waite for each chapter and one from an amazing tarot deck that put the elements, the periodic system, into a deck of cards. So I pulled one of that. It's like a completely made up different way of using that. So it's informing sort of like my practice, but it's not something that I make very public. It's not something, or even though we did a whole show, that's wrong, 2016, Magical Acts Method, where we worked with Chodorowsky and magical psychomagic, and we used the Tarot de Marseille to facilitate the whole show. So yeah, it does inform in different ways. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. A little audio description while Stephanie was saying that she was raising her hands very high to signify the whole world, kind of.
Yeah.
I felt that.
Yeah. Thank you.
I can go on. And I found that entry that you kind of found in this not so easy question, I think, very useful. So I will use it too. The question of how do I actually relate to the term of witch? And I can state maybe two points for me there. First of all, I got introduced into the knowledge about such figures as witches mostly through Disney movies. Not even through, you know, in Germany there's Gebrüder Grimm and, you know, old fairy tales, but actually my images and also my ideas of how they would behave and stuff would really be primarily sourced by Disney and probably a bit by Russian fairy tale movies as we watch them a lot. But let's stick with Disney. What I just found out very much later is that all the Disney characters that were actually made to frighten me in my childhood, and of course this worked, I mean, the Witch of Schneewittchen I found like really scary. There's also the figure of Ursula in the movie Ariel, which is not exactly a witch, but it's an octopus lilac, you know, like woman figure who of course also knows that her magic. And there are lots of others. And so basically it took me some time and studies in cultural studies to find out that there is a line between all those figures, and it's an element of queerness that they all kind of relate to in a way. And that gave me a really satisfying new look on actually someone like Malefiz as a very, you know, like a leather dyke kind of figure that I now could admire in another way. Also, Ursula is strongly read as actually a very butchy kind of second wave feminist in a way. And and therefore for the male figures, this goes also, there's Scar, who's said to be a very distinguished faggot and stuff. So lots of stuff going on there, and I was quite thankful to read this, you know, like rereading, re-notion, and being able to enter, because of course I felt myself failing in a lot of ways the images that were like delivered to me concerning the princess or the prince, or like, you know, the stars of the movies. Normally I would not be able to follow their lifestyle so much. And so there was at least finding some orientation with that. And then of course afterwards I was kind of wondering, okay, but what are these practices that are kind of so far away, that feel so very, you know, like what is it to cast a spell, what is it to bewitch someone? And I would have my difficulties to realizing that, how, in what way I would probably be capable of that. And so probably I'm not using those words so much for what I'm doing. But when I look from another perspective onto what is it actually that I consider my practices and what is at the heart of it, there is always a trying to or honing my energies for transforming situations. And that's also mostly going for the care work that is needing to be, that, that it needs to be put behind something like the scenes. So I'm working as a performer, I also work as a member of several collectives or collective-like shapes of networks. And there is often like something that we would put out, but there's so much like we put into those structures and into those relationships and into anyways building a kind of formation that would then be probably able to produce. But I find myself so often on the reproductive side, of course, on these of these schemes. And all of a sudden, I would be someone who then sits down for hours with my colleagues and tells them all about their star signs and in the midst of a rehearsal. And all of a sudden we would be out of the question of what we do next, but we would rather indulge in this moment of listening, hearing, being able to perceive each other in different ways, probably uncovering certain, I don't know, Virgo in third house aspects then make a lot of sense all of a sudden to how we come together. So in this very, or otherwise put, and I find myself to easily find into the role of a narrator or facilitator of those spaces. Like it's just happening. So I felt also, aha, okay, this is a quality I never learned to appreciate somewhere. Nobody gave me a certificate of you're really good at that. But I feel, aha, okay, it happens, you know? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're just connected to an energy that you don't necessarily have to put so much effort in it to let it flow, it rather comes. And I think to be aware of such qualities is probably something that I would learn from spell books, or, you know, from those framings. Mm-hmm. But I'm very much going also for the idea of, yeah, you would not need a certificate to be a, you know, spell maker maybe. And one thing, I was super surprised when I read a part of the spiral book of Starhawk. Starhawk is like one of the contemporary witches that a lot of people would know and that also are currently very much perceived or, I don't know, quoted stuff. And they're kind of proposing a lot of methods and a lot of tools, as you said. And actually, I would think, wow, but I learned all of that in my theater classes. Mm. You know, we're already using that. This is the basis, this is the core material of how we would work with or for our creativity, especially in the moments when we don't work for production or when we don't work for this should go on stage like this, but rather for conjuring energies. And this is what we need to do. Otherwise, there, you know, there would be just be nothing and especially no fun. And like fun is an important thing, I guess.
And a great political power, isn't it?
Martina Hefter prepared an audio postcard, which she sent to us from Leipzig, the city where she lives and works. As an artist, Martina combines her practice as a writer, choreographer, and dancer. In the works that she showed as a part of Breaking the Spell gatherings, she used recordings similar to the one you are about to hear.
Hi, this is Martina Hefter from Leipzig, Germany. I took part in the Breaking the Spell sessions last year in Leipzig and Munich, and I am so happy to contribute something to your podcast. It was so nice to listen to your conversation you made, I think it was in Ghent, and to hear some of the voices again I already know, and listen to your interesting thoughts. I thought I could tell you some things about my current work, which is in some way referring to the topic of the witch too, but in a quite different way, you will see. You need some information before, I'm sorry, but otherwise you would not understand maybe what the context is. I was in a conversation with a young man from Nigeria during the last month. He wrote me in the beginning as a love scammer under a fake profile, pretending he was a CEO from Austin, Texas. And of course I knew that he was a love scammer, and I in the beginning, I lied back with a quite absurd information about who I was, and he did not believe me and wrote back that he found this quite funny and liked what I was writing. And I wrote back and told him that, of course, I knew he was a love scammer. And we found into a conversation. It's not so easy for me to talk about all these things without the fear of representing some racist stereotypes. I hope I don't do this. The conversation was the base for a longer essay or long poem. It's a mixture of both about this conversation and about reality, about love scamming, about me as an older woman. It spread it out a little bit because I did a lot of research about Nigeria and about Africa and the colonialism theme, which is very much related to the love scamming theme. I will not talk here much about this topic because it would be too long. But yes, someday we ended out that I made a joke about sending a curse over someone. I don't know. I don't remember what I exactly said and which was the context. But he was really, really frightened and upset and asked me to never ever use the word witch again when writing him. And he asked me if I was into witchcraft, and in the beginning I found this funny, but after a few seconds I felt really ashamed. I could hear that he was really frightened, and I promised him, I had to promise him that I was not a witch. And then I did lots of research about this witch thing in Nigeria and in Western Africa. There's a strong belief in witches. In Nigeria, it has its base in a very strong Christian belief, especially in the southern parts of the country, and is mixed, of course, with the roots of some African religions. It's not so easy to talk about this without without representing racist stereotypes again, and I hope I don't do. It came to my mind how easily we claim this witch motive in our Western thinking without remembering that in other parts of the world there are completely different approaches, and we can so easily use this witch theme as a metaphor for being a strong woman or referring to witchcraft as something positive, while other people in other parts of the world can not have this approach. And yes, I hope I put it in a way you can understand what I mean. Yes, this is what I was thinking about. The young man and me continued the conversation. He never wanted to get on with his love scamming tricks under his real identity. But someday he disappeared. It was only a few weeks ago. I don't know what happened. Maybe he was too anxious that I really could be a witch. Or maybe he just lost his interest. I don't know. Yes, this is the story I wanted to tell you. I hope my English was not so bad. Yes, and I send you much love and hugs. and hope to see you all again someday. Bye bye.
Jumping maybe on that, I think it's extremely fascinating that indeed maybe this is, we are coming back again to the notion of the knowledge and how is it transmitted. Sometimes it is transmitted through the indeed hegemonic dominating educational structures, but often you need to find them somewhere else, like through your community or through a group of friends or acquaintances, to really be able to generate your energy from. And I often think that this is extremely precious as this kind of embodied lived knowledge. Again, it is quite often perceived as something not serious enough, not socially relevant enough, not that artistic maybe. And I'm looking at Alexandra now as you work with body also, at least as I feel it, as a generator of an amazing knowledge. And I was wondering how you would position yourself within the question of a witchcraft and your artistic practice.
I will also take on what the witchery or what witch means to me, or where I come from, or how I use the term. I understand it as a witch, as a person who is a wisdom holder and the one who works with the loss of land. Someone used the term as a witchy person. This is an extremely private practice for me, or it's extremely intimate and personal, also discovery in a way. And it is strongly based in intuition, and also how I came to trust the intuition, coming from the reality where intuition is a fantasy that has nothing to do with the real and serious. So going through the process of accepting or reopening self to the information and the wisdom that comes from the intuition, and being able to follow that guidance, I think has informed a lot also my personal, my private, but therefore also the artistic. Because as you, Marta, said, I do work with body. I've always did. And I read someone said it, and it's not me. I'm quoting someone whose name I don't remember. And I thought I took a picture of that quote, but I took a picture of a different one. Like, this is not serving. But the person said that none of the spoken languages is their mother tongue, that the mother language is not the spoken word. And when I read it, I felt great resonance, because I feel that my mother language is the movement, largely speaking of a movement, the universal movement, the earth movement, the life as a movement, the movement as life. Yeah, so body has always been my main tool. I even made a note that I think body is my tool of divination. That this is my book of wisdom. This is where I get all the knowledge from. That's why I keep saying that I believe there's more than five senses, and through all the other 21, 36 senses, there is ability to access the wisdom. And I think especially a few years ago, or since my injury happened, since my chronic pain, or therefore which transformed into chronic fatigue, shifted also the way how my body leads me, how the body becomes or is inevitable, what's this word? Not questioned, or it cannot be questioned, guide through reality or through work. So therefore I stepped out of making staged work I stepped out of working strongly with the institutions because the demand of energy or the use of time or relation couldn't meet the needs of my body, which I cannot go without anywhere, or I cannot do anything without. I also wanted to come back to the spell, what you, Marta, was saying, the moment where the need for this gathering came or took space in you. I don't know, I wanted to go a little bit to how the body connects to the land and how I've always had the issue with saying the word or saying the sentence, I am from Poland, as I do not feel that I am from that, what Poland is. I was born into the land that is geopolitically called Poland, and therefore following my body as a guide and the ancestry that is within my body led me to discovering the other history of this land, that it's geopolitically put on it. So I feel that, as you say, what are the other ways to speak of, or other places from which we can speak of the situation that it's taking place now, or that it triggers now or creates the friction now, to shift the energy so the shift can start happening, and then, you know, the transformation will, I don't know, it will take its own shape. That it's a little bit out of our hands. Mm-hmm. No? It's a bit, therefore, the collectiveness of the gesture, it's needed in order to cover as many spots as possible. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I hope it makes sense without the visual gesturing.
Life will be out of description in a moment. No, yeah. No worries.
Well, yeah, actually, I wanted to describe briefly that when you said the words the body and the land, there was a synchronized nodding of heads all around the table. So that was a collective reaction to that. Mm-hmm. Another way I can describe that, I saw your hands moving up and down and all around each other as if they were talking, maybe another being, not a talking entity. Mm.
I would actually stay with this notion of land, but maybe also of a landscape, and also coming back to the mushroom that already appeared, but also to the objects that you, Mike, brought to us in the framework of your great performance. I would like to ask you about how in these practices that you mentioned, the non-human beings, entities, I mean, what kind of role do they play there, and how you engage with them, how you are influenced by them.
I like that you use the word non-human, because actually I learned that this construction, this non minus something, is kind of an interesting way to make visible the power relations that are within this word, or at least I learned that from activists from the group community, who said it's actually great to say that one is non-disabled and not one is abled, or at least some would vote for that kind of formulation, because when you state you are abled, you're still stating this is the superior state, you know, and disabled would be then the non-superior state, and turned the other way around, non-disabled could be actually something that you position yourself in the more in the deficient situation of being non-disabled, so you lack the experience of having a disabled body. So in the question of non-human, what does it mean actually? Like who's in power there? And this very much brings me to why I like to have the company of some agents that most of us wouldn't consider Hans or Thomas or Anna, but rather, as you said, non-human entities, of course. While I'm speaking, I'm turning around a little stone in my hand, which comes from the Baltic Sea, and is, I think, very typical for there. So I'm sorry I shoplifted you at the beach to travel with you all around. And as I said, they kind of, I think stones mostly, or stones are those who offer me to move them around the most. You know, like stones are, we could perceive them as laying around on the floor, not doing anything, but actually they're the most, you know, like they're really offering you to have movement with them, like, because they are heavy, because they give you some kind of weight, because they, yeah, they're kind of, and also they would easily take your grease and kind of shape their own skin with it. So it's like, I think they're really benefiting from me when I'm carrying them around, and also I am benefiting from our symbiosis because they're keeping my very nervous hands in a like playful constellation, and they are actually quite nice supporters of me when I'm like, now I'm a bit stressed because I'm not knowing where I'm exactly going with that. You know, you see my hands moving them around, and
because you don't maybe even, they know.
Yeah, probably they know, and probably you don't have to listen to me so much as you can only also observe them, you know, like dancing their ballet. Of course, they are, we have this, I think in a way, supportive relationship, I would say, but I don't know what, of course, would be another answer other than I would put in my words onto them, although I go very much with your notion, Alex, of probably the body and the, you know, the corporeal relations that we enter in are more of our mother tongue than it is a certain worded, you know, language that is also there, but it's probably not the first thing that you perceive or learn when you enter the world. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Probably there's also not so much words to that.
Yeah, thank you for the introduction with the non-human. I always use the more than human somehow. Mm-hmm. I used to use non-human, and then I realized if I speak about the non-human, people get stressed out sometimes. And if I say also, like, because I like to refer, I mean, a landscape for me like doesn't exist somehow. Mm-hmm. It's a... yeah, it's like different. That's a more romantic, aestheticized understanding of a constellation that I'm entering when I walk, and co-creating the maybe assemblage, and I'm like deeply connected with, because there is a metabolism. And the connection to the land, like for me, that's why I can refer, or I can relate very well to the, what you said, Alex, about like this nation states. And as a German person, of course, I really don't identify with being German, but I do, because also there is like a, there's a necessity towards that. And I like at a young age decided that this is part of what I do. But like I can't refer really to the land in this kind of a way, because there's the blood and soil ideology that comes up, that pops up like immediately for me. So this is very complicated. It's actually very complicated for me to even hear people acknowledging I'm on the land of the, because I'm somehow thinking, okay, and what about the trees? And what about the stones? Like, what about the, like, more than human time frame? I understand that there is, like, sort of, like, a political necessity for that, and I honor that. But there is, like, even more, maybe, to start to think about. And I'm very, very curious about that. And this is how I landed in antiquity, very much so. It's very interesting, because in the women's party, no, I don't know what the English title is, it's Aristophanes who made like a comedy about women, saying, claiming like they also wanted to have a piece of land, they also wanted to be part of the polis, and hence my unease with the polis and politics, and like us referring back to something that is super toxic from my point of view, where I'm not part of the humanity. And I think, you know, there is like a toxicity, like a spell in these words that is carried on.
and all inclusivity cannot get rid of that. So this is like what, like maybe my spell making is trying to find different words, also follow back and deconstruct what about, this is like I'm a recovering philosopher, like this is like I have it in my body. Mm-hmm. This is part of my body. So yeah, and it's very much about this. We don't even, like in the Aristophanes play, it's not, we don't even have, the women are saying, we don't even have like a piece of land where we can put our corpses. And I mean, this is like Aristophanes, and this is staged, of course, with only men speaking and making fun of women, trying to just ask for the very basic thing. While at the same time being put in the position of, like, as I would say, reproduction is invented then. And like sacrificing, there is not the word female then, but somehow like inventing the complexity of what it means to be female in that time. And it's very deeply connected to theater. And that's something that I'm very interested in, and how to maybe break the spell of this. I'm trying to do this now with my walking project, where I'm like really putting my body in the landscape that is not there. And finding myself being watched by animals, by birds, like, you know, who warn each other and all of that is like going on, and like sort of coming into that and understanding, okay, there's like a huge public. And there was a moment really when I thought, okay, there's like this huge public, there's actually this audience of what I'm performing here and what we are performing as we call ourselves humans, which not like every body that we would consider human does on planet Earth. It's also good to remind yourself of that. They're watching us. They know, they do, we just don't know. We don't know, and how to maybe find a different way to understand like the interconnectedness, the metabolic responsibility that we share within this constellation. Yeah, that's what I'm working on.
I think I want to pick up on that being watched and that, and maybe the how to position self as a human within the body of Earth. I think that's how I would approach it. Mm-hmm. As opposed to the idea of landscape, mm-hmm. A few things. So also coming from climate change depression over 10 years ago, that sort of wanting to give up on, or at least to give up on being a human within this problem, not seeing the or the exit of the complexity of the situation. I don't know, opening myself to the spirituality and people who guided me, and also who start introduce me to the language that would paint another possibilities for my imagination, how to be a human within or on the earth, following the notion of all the beings on the earth having a spirit as well. And by beings, I mean as well as rivers, trees and stones and all the birds, animals, stars, the visible, non-visible. So within this constellation, I remember learning that humans are here to, it's not my words again, that humans are here, put here to keep Earth as beautiful as possible. So therefore, the arms, the hands that we have are so articulated, so we can make beautiful things out of the found leftovers, or we have the aesthetics to build altars or whatever, to take care of, to consume as much as it as needs to be consumed in order to keep balance. So I think with this idea which I don't know what it means yet. I'm not near to be an expert in it, but it did open up different doors for me, how to position myself and not feel so guilty for existing within the richness of life of this planet and this reality.
What you said just made me think of a quote by Eileen Miles, a poet also, that I find hot. And they were saying, and nature just wants us to look at them, or just wants to be looked at, and actually that's what humans are for. So it goes even further in this idea just of being a kind of admirer, you know. A friend of mine got super angry at this quote saying, I hate this, you know, like making an entity that is not human human to be able to talk about it. So nature wants to, we don't know, you know, like there is no such human entity called nature that could tell us what they want or needs to tell us even. They just manifest. So yeah, probably this is like very much, we could talk about that relation for a very long time, but I kind of felt also a relief, you know, like this, because this was just an offering of a very nice role that one could take instead of the extractivist or the superpopulator or, I don't know, the shitting problem that sits on an otherwise beautiful planet. You know, like there's a lot of self-negating thinking also.
But we're part of the nature, we're part of the planet. So if you think of the planet as a person, and plants and forests as a person, like this is Robin Wall Kimmerer introducing this idea, and I'm really following her on that. I really love that. I think it makes a lot of sense. Then it's like, there is like a different kind of an agency. And then it's also us humans, we are part of nature. I mean, the whole thing, nature, the word comes from the Latin, being born. Mm-hmm. So the understanding is some, and in Greek times it doesn't exist. In Greek times it's only physics. It's only bodies, basically. Mm-hmm. So that's a completely different understanding. You can see how they're like really going between like, we're a snake, we're in a human body, we're like, you know, they're morphing into all these kind of different bodies. It like is super queer, like being like with like, I think non-binary in a way that we can't even think. Really, I do, before all of this happens. So, and then like, then the passivity of nature, the understanding of nature is connected in a weird way. I mean, we do know this, to the female and the objectification of that in this kind of a way. And if you just think of okay, this is like a construction that was like sort of created in a moment in history when agriculture was like really becoming very important. And Dionysus, the first one being the first one in the storytelling of the time that was written down, to put a plow in front of an animal, right? Then this like really changes the perspective. Then we're like with the Federici, and somehow this is what, from my perspective, is happening there. And then it's very clear that, of course, whatever we call nature now, these, you know, non-human persons are also, you know, they're looking at us and they also want maybe this kind of an exchange, want to be looked at in a certain way. I mean, there is this thing that Robin Wall Kimmerer is always talking about like colors and how like the beauty, and that's connected to, with the worst word there is in the word, you would call it reproduction. But there is like, I think that's really the most toxic word there is. And I think the understanding of like the being centrally connected between different bodies in this kind of a way that also creates what we now call beauty or experiences beauty is delicious, and it's also a promising way of thinking.
From what I'm hearing from you all is, and what stays with me, I think, is the need, the urgent need for some regenerative spaces or time or relations, bodies, and And I guess that corresponds very much with this urge of the idea of the breaking the spell to build conditions for alliances to take place or to support each other in the struggles against extractivism and all the violence we are confronted with on the everyday basis. And feels like a normal, almost impossible task, but I'm thinking, well, if even having space and time for, like, as we did, like, for 7 days, that enables us to somehow maybe withdraw for a moment from this self-perpetuating, often very exhausting mode and listen to each other, what if this is already a first possible step to find ways to regenerate ourselves and support each other through our very different trajectories. Mm-hmm. This is what I guess would stay with me as a hope or as a maybe promise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for me, it's really interesting that the practices that you shared with us today in this conversation, they are not, I mean, I can imagine, like, using them or thinking with them outside of these frameworks, Marta, that you mentioned, like this time that is somehow out of the usual order. Mm-hmm. And it's really for me about the perception and how observation itself has certain transformative power. And since it transforms us, it can be a tool, but it can also be it's good to observe transformation, and I think that we gain a lot of power from that, but also I think that changing the perspective and, like, observing itself has something really important in it. Maybe I wouldn't call it a strategy, but it's a really beautiful way of being in the world.
Yeah, and I think we're making reality, you know, with this. Reality doesn't exist. No, it doesn't. We are, like, deciding on what reality is, like, in a sort of democratic process that is not acknowledged. That it doesn't exist outside of ways of interacting in some kind of way and say, ah, yeah, okay, that's real. There needs to be a group to say, this is real, this is reality, so we're making it. Like, this is Donna Haraway. We're creating better depictions of reality. In her understanding in science, I would say it's art.
But who actually separated those two in the beginning? I mean,
very good. Yeah, totally with you. Yeah, totally.
Both are the ways to describe what the experience of reality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and also offer modes of perception for it that were not yet there, or that needed to be reheard, or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I really also would like to, just as a last thing, I would like to point out how much it is important to me to be, like, now in this group, for example, very much surrounded with people who use their words as, for me, it's kind of working as spells, because I realize that people are using their words very precisely and actively turning them around, you know, like doing something with those very words. And I very much, I think this is an underestimated quality, but it has more or less the impact of a spell on me when I'm hearing somebody putting something, you know, in a way that I would never have perceived it. It's kind of really, you know, giving me an access to a reality that I wasn't part of before. Mm-hmm. And I think that is just so valuable. And I like to have, like, you know, these kinds of conversations that consider that as a quality in itself also. And I can share for this also a bit of info that I stumbled upon, also, like, just a wordplay. There was in the 70s, so it must have been very much second wavy and probably not at all my group of people, but there was a group of people calling themselves witch. And, you know, I was like, oh yeah, maybe they were this, like, you know, red-haired people. Like, you know, we're cooking tea, blah, blah, blah. I don't know, I'm full of prejudices, you know. And then I realized, okay, no, this was an acronym actually for, I think they were saying, we are the Women's International Conspiracy for Power. That was which was standing for, and of course the women, yeah, whatever, but I was just so happy, you know, that there's this fun in that again,
uh-huh.
And also giving me, like, you know, immediately giving me a new energy or a new image to that word that I was probably not really able to relate to at that moment.
Mm.
So, yeah, words.
Mm. Words time.
In closing of this episode, you will listen to an audio commentary prepared by Georgia Ohanesian-Nardin. They address the theme of language and how words can and do become tools of performative action. For Georgia, text is one of the means of artistic expression, along with movement, video, and choreography.
Okay, so I'm thinking about what a spell is, or what is a spell, and what does it mean to cast a spell. And I think there's something here about enchantment, or about the relationship between language and enchantment, maybe. I don't know if I would claim casting spells as a way to orient other people's energies or situations, because in a way I don't see how, as a methodology, this is so much different from other forms of extraction and or oppression. I think what I want to do, or what I can do, is facilitate spaces and approaches to work that are somehow lateral to consciousness, or what we think about as consciousness. Or spaces and situations that deal with the space that is left when we don't do. I think laziness is enchanting. I think it could be a good ground for contamination, and it gives back so much. I think saying no is enchanting. I think embodying saying no, allowing space for the ripple effect of negation, of leaving, of opening other possibilities for space. I think no and I want are spells. And I want to find a better word for what I mean by spell, but I guess what it holds for me is something like a worded formula, or some kind of equation in language, or something. I know I'm being vague. I know, but it's been a while, and I find vagueness enchanting too. Because it kind of creates a plane of dialogue where we meet, and sometimes it's awkward, but many times it's subtle. And awkwardness can also be subtle, for sure. So yeah, anyhow, I like the space that vagueness takes up. Maybe this is also witchcraft. Or at least this is how I think about these things, witchcraft, whatever we want to call it right now, in my work. Like, I feel like a lot of the time we're so focused on the doing, and I know for myself when I'm there, for instance, in that state, I forget about the sensing, or it becomes more difficult to stay in the sensing or in the listening, which in a way I think are ultimate witchcraft. I went to hear Paul Preciado talk the other day in a big institution. I can't say I'm a huge fan of his, or I don't know if it's him or the fact that a lot of the things that he says or has said in the past go unchecked by quote unquote community. And I'm not a fan of this, or that I get sermon vibes and it makes me uneasy. Also, anyhow, digression. Anyhow, I went and he was presenting his new book. And he said something like, or I understood something around this. The only possible revolution in this moment is your body. Or is in your body, or your body is the only terrain for revolution that you have right now. And I think oftentimes this is easy to forget. I also wonder if I would want a revolution in my body, to be honest, as I feel like I'm constantly listening and feeling and sensing for what is here or what has got me here. And everything is everything all of the time in this body. This also sounds vague, but when I say it, I feel it really clearly or specifically, maybe. So anyhow, I don't know if or how I would feel about that, but there's an aspect of embodiment that is fundamental right now. As revolution, as community, as relationship to the earth. And maybe the spell is embodiment. Like when there are no gaps between myself and my body. And I don't mean like being whole, or like I don't know what we really mean by that. And it's also something that scares me, this language. It's more like really listening, paying attention, or bringing attention. And that's when things start to change, I guess.
Breaking the Spell project has been produced by Residenzschauspiel Leipzig, Münchner Kammerspiele, Performing Arts Institute in Warsaw, and Filmfair in Ghent. It's been funded by the German Federal Cultural Foundation and by the Federal Government Commissioner for Culture and the Media.